For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome. This is On Mic with Jordan Rich. Conversation is alive and well with creative people who have so much to say and so much to offer, and I can't wait to speak with them. Today, a successful local filmmaker from the New England area, bridging the gap between cultures through the films he creates. His name is Raouf Zaki. He's a producer and director. His company is RA Vision Productions, and he's produced several critically acclaimed and award-winning films, such as Fireflies, Santa Claus in Baghdad, Dating Dawn, Get a Grip, The Mourner's Wife, and more. His latest film, premiering April 14th here in the Boston area at the Maynard Fine Arts Theater, is called Dream. And here's a bit of the trailer.
Do you know the three greatest regrets people have on their deathbeds?
And you're not going to believe this, but I actually met someone. Her name's Daisy. She's almost blind, but somehow she's able to see the beauty in me.
Get out of here!
They are both on ventilators.
This is the one thing I do not have a lot of right now.
This is my first time in a movie theater.
You really want to put Daisy in that situation to remove her from her home?
You okay?
What is your dream?
To sail independently, but that's just a dream.
Dream is an inspirational film produced and directed by a master filmmaker, Raouf Zaki, who joins us now on mic to talk about his film.
Dream is a film about real people with challenges. And it happens during a time when our world was disconnected because of COVID. And the characters are, you know, a man who with autism who loses his parents within 48 hours, which is, is based on a true story. And he tries to connect somehow with people, and he doesn't know how because all the love and the attention he had was from his parents. When COVID hit, he just goes out and tries to connect to people. But people are, already aloof and refusing that kind of connection, even talking. So he misinterprets this. So he goes to a petting zoo, and there he meets a woman who is blind. And they have a conversation, and they connect, and we're introduced to this world of the blind where, at the Carroll Center, where it was many scenes were shot, where people do blind woodworking, blind fencing, and blind sailing with a guide. And these traditions at the Carroll Center for the Blind were passed on by a man whose father, Carroll, who was a veteran of World War II, who discovered that introducing these activities to the blind would help them, ameliorate their senses of navigation and their still being practiced until today, which is fascinating. So he's introduced to that world, and he learns that his friend, who's blind, would love to sail on her own without a guide. And him being a brilliant app developer, embarks on developing an app that will help her, discover her way in the Charles River on her own. And it's also about how she helps him in many ways with his insecurities and fear of crowds and fear of noises, which has its own set of challenges. So it's a you know, heart-touching, you know, story, heartwarming story about these two people from two different worlds who come together under, you know, the most cruel circumstances in this world that's disconnected, and they connect it to each other and find connections in this world of disconnection. Both, you know, the woman who plays Daisy, the female character, is someone who is legally blind, who overcame all of this, you know, by earning a PhD in education, by winning three blind regattas in Boston. So it's really inspiring to make this film dream, and I hope people can come and see it for themselves, because, you know, with independent film, it offers a unique perspective on you know, things that we don't really see. They're not formulated like a Hollywood script. They're just based on true people.
Let's talk about some of the other films and try to be brief, because I want to get you to cover many of them. You've won awards in various festivals for films like Singing in the Dark, Santa Claus in Baghdad, Fireflies. What's your mission statement? Because you seem to be looking at people who are challenged, who are rising above it. But I don't want to put words in your mouth, Raouf. Tell us about it.
Well, I worked a lot, you know, with characters who are misrepresented, and like Arab Americans during 9/11 and beyond. Also with the disability community, and I mean, I like to give you know, explore these characters, and because they, you know, sometimes this also challenges our perception. I'd love to work with scripts that challenges the audience perception. I adapt my style just according to whichever story, you know, I'm working with. So with Santa Claus in Baghdad, it was during two kids in Iraq, during the embargo days, where people were selling books just to buy medicine. And it was a beautiful Christmas story. And it went on to be, you know, used in schools, and a study guide was made by Harvard. Same thing with Fireflies, a film without dialogue that challenges our perceptions of, you know, the world, and especially people from the Middle East. The same thing with Dream, following on that aspect of, you know, challenging our perception of people who have mental or physical challenges, and how they can even excel at right. some tasks that we're not able to excel at.
I got several questions to talk to you about, because you're a filmmaker and a very good one. Documentaries have become so much a part of viewing on streaming services and platforms, and they have to be not just informative, but educational and entertaining. As a filmmaker, is that more challenging, to make a documentary something that will keep people's interest as opposed to a fictional story? Or what do you use as technique these days to really capture an audience?
Well, Dream is not a documentary. It's a narrative film. But
right,
yes, I've
right.
been involved in many documentaries. But Dream does combine aspects of a documentary, which is, you know, like you can I guess use the term docudrama in that case of Dream, because there are real you know, non-actors in the film who will just portray themselves, especially from the Carroll Center of the Blind, you know, you can mix both, which gives you know, a layer of hyper reality to the work that you're doing, and adds authenticity to it. But yes, documentaries have been on the rise in the past few years. I think people are looking for, you know, are wanting to relate to more reality, to more authentic characters, and that's why, you know, I think having fantasy in films that are blockbusters is, I think, you know, maybe great for, entertainment. But I don't call them, you know, I don't call these films cinema because they don't really. Cinema is about challenging our perceptions, about having a message out there, or, you know, like the films of other, you know, people, for example, like Martin Scorsese or David Lynch or Jean Cassavetes or Robert Bresson, who use, you know, powerful stories to tell us, you know, these, to my opinions, are auteurs and filmmakers. So I think wanting to, you know, relate to real people, especially in the last few years, is becoming, you know, it's becoming more on the rise. And that's why I think people are after that.
Let's talk about the way films are produced these days. We've talked in the past, and boy, the technology has changed over the years. And now with the digital world expanding and being so cool, has it made your job technically easier, more efficient, less costly, or are we talking about similar challenges that you had in the film days?
It certainly, you know, I remember the days of film, where as a student I had to save, student at Boston University, I had to save, you know, money just to even take from my food money to save for developing the cost of celluloid film. And that's just for a 3-minute can of film that I used to go on Commonwealth Avenue and send to the gift to the lab and pay, you know, maybe $100 or something just to have it developed. And then hope it,
right.
You know, it does, nothing happens in the lab. And there are more processes than this. So it used to take a lot longer, you know, obviously 30 years ago for filmmakers like us to make films. And certainly the digital world has changed, you know, exponentially this whole arena of filmmaking and storytelling. And there are so many, like, submissions, and Sundance were like 300, maybe 20 years ago. Now they're like over 15,000 each year. So how the, you know, it
right.
just can shows you, like, people are making films on their phones.
And, yeah.
You know, so it brought this democracy to cinema, but still, you know, great storytelling is what rules at the end of the day. So it doesn't matter what technology you're using. It matters what story you're going to tell me.
Right.
It doesn't matter what lens or what, you know, camera. It's great that this is available, and it's just, it's incredible. But at the end of the day, it has to be the tool, the filmmaker, and not the tool, the person behind it.
Right. Rove, I don't know if you heard about this, but and I'm not bringing this up because I'm a big fan of the Academy Awards and how they do things, but they are going to be adding a casting Oscar for casting agents and so forth. And I wanted to ask you about that because your films are special in a lot of ways because you use unknown actors or non-actors in the case of Dream. Why don't you share with us a bit more about your process there and how important is casting in a film? I think it's super important.
I think David Lean, who is the filmmaker behind Lawrence of Arabia, a legendary filmmaker, said there is no compromise when it comes to casting. When he cast Peter O'Toole, when he cast Omar Sharif in Lawrence of Arabia, he had went through hundreds of actors and decided to challenge the producer's pressure to put a certain actor because they're his friend and chose the right person for the role. And that's extremely important. Casting, to me, is... is just like he said, you know, there's no compromise. So I go through an extensive process where I go through actors and, you know, audition them on Zoom, audition them in person, not just on Zoom. Try to challenge them on the auditions and have them improvise and show me a side that's based on what I wrote. That's not in the material. I go through this. And when it comes to working with non-actors, a legendary filmmaker also by Robert, his name is Robert Bresson, used to work all these films with non-actors. He called them models. And because he, you know, and I love this filmmaker because you know, you can tell the authenticity of the characters on film. But you know, what he introduced was a way of casting an actor based on a persona. So in other words, like if I want a person who is this type of traits and this type of look, I would look for a non-actor with this type of traits and look, and then, you know, it's closer to their personality, so it would be easier for them to act, you know, to not really act or to be themselves on film. This was, you know, a method that I also use in narrative films, where I was looking for Middle Eastern actors in Boston. So in a comedy that I made called Just Your Average Arab, about a group of Arab Americans who go in the back of a convenience store and try to change their names and their hair and all of this because of backlash. And in the meantime, there's confusion, and the FBI is listening in on them, thinking that they're planning the next big terrorist attack, and that's why they're going through these exercises of changing their identity. It's a black comedy, but I had to cast, like, you know, actors from a church or that I thought would fit the role, or a doctor that I never tried acting because I wanted a doctor in there, and it turned out to be hilarious. I won Best Film at the Flemish Film Festival, and you know, it went on also to win other comedy festivals in the nation, and it was also a big hit among colleges during a time where, you know, again, we needed to dispel negative stereotypes. So, yeah, I hope that that answers your question.
It does. It does indeed. And I want to shift gears just a bit and talk about another film. We might have mentioned it, maybe not, but I'll mention it now, Beethoven's Letters. And the reason I bring it up is because this is a costume drama. I mean, you obviously you're talking about Beethoven, so it goes back to the early 1800s, late 1700s. Is that more of a challenge when you have to bring the audience back a couple of hundred years from costumes and sets and speaking and dialogue and all that kind of stuff?
Yes, absolutely. My co-producer, Monica Ledoux, did a great job looking for the right costumes in a local costume shop in Waltham. And, you know, we when faced with this challenge, you know, we had the generosity of the Lexington Historical Society, you know, having giving us you know, a couple of living rooms to film in, you know, for the scenes that we shot Beethoven's Letters, and obviously getting the right hair wig and all of that, it becomes an expense. And, you know, but it was wonderful to create this on film, especially it goes, again, with the theme of, you know, overcoming challenges, which is going to be screened at the same night as we're screening Dream. And Beethoven's Letters are a part which I think was not really explored. You know, people talk quite a bit about his life in films and, you know, Immortal Beloved, for example, and his music. But the interior, you know, the interior dialogue he had with people about how misunderstood he is in society, because he was deaf, and how people, how he had to move constantly from place to place because he had these misunderstandings with people, and how he didn't, he was suffering quite a bit physically because he had these stomach issues, which were later discovered was because of lead poisoning when somebody took a, you know, a strain of his hair as a souvenir on his deathbed, and then it was analyzed by DNA years later. You know, the poor guy was suffering, you know, from lead poisoning throughout his entire life from the pewter where he was drinking his water every day. And, you know, so all these misunderstandings and this isolation, which made him, you know, like almost like a hermit-like figure, you know, caused a lot of, you know, invoked a lot of feelings of suicide. And he mentions that he had, you know, these suicide attempts, you know, or these depressing moments because he was eating alone, because he was living alone. And even his maid, you know, he would have, you know, issues with her, and then he would have to get a new maid. And it's all because of this this world, which was expressed through his letters. Mm-hmm. And that's explored in Beethoven's Letters, which is a short film.
You know, we're promoting an event coming up April 14th in the Boston area at the Maynard Fine Arts Theater, which will feature Dream, the premiere, and some short films, including one called Singing in the Dark. And before we close out, it involves a very good friend of mine who's been a guest of mine in the past on radio and on my podcast, Ellis Hall. And what's interesting about it, talk about it, the film, but also talk about how you discovered him, because it's kind of an interesting story.
Yes, Ellis Hall was, you know, my next door neighbor. I was living in L.A. for a year in 2019. And a friend of mine said, hey, why don't you compete the AT&T 48-hour filmathon competition? And I went there and I stood in line with a long, long line of filmmakers. And that evening, you had to form a team of you know, 10 people and make a film within 48 hours with them. Unfortunately, I was unsuccessful at forming a team, I guess. A lot of filmmakers wanted to go for the horror genre, and you know, I wasn't really into that. And you know, I went home kind of like contemplating what I could do. I don't have a team, and I was thinking, you know, I have two choices. I can continue to be depressed about it, or I can just make my own film. And you know, I had a camera, I had the sound and everything else. So I called you know, my next door neighbor, whom I only knew about at the time. When I was living next to him, I only knew, you know, that he was blind, and he was, you know, I'd hear the music, you know, over the fence between us. And I was like, okay, well, I'll go see what's all up, and maybe I'll make a film on him. And he was pretty open to the idea. He was, you know, had an amazing sense of humor. He cracked me up when I was filming so many times.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, he would mention words like Shaktalala and how are
you?
Oh,
yes, you know, yes, yes, like yes. That, you know. He's a force of nature, man. He is unbelievably energetic. And for people who will see the film, it's called Singing in the Dark. Check that out. But also just Google Ellis Hall on YouTube and be blown away by his. I guess he worked under the tutelage of Ray Charles. And anyway, I didn't mean to step on you there, but he's such a close personal friend of mine over the years. And I love the idea that you did a film and you won the big prize for that.
I couldn't believe it. Out of 180 films, I showed up and everybody who didn't sign up with me came up to me and was like, I wish I was on your team.
Yes, like, what happens that...
Prize, and
that's
Alice,
great.
We shared the prize. And,
yeah.
You know, we were in Warner Brothers for 3 days. It was really nice it was a great experience. You know, all these films you can watch on April 14th at 6:30 p.m. at the Maynard Fine Art Theater. And the only way to get a ticket is to go to ravisionproductions.com, ravisionproductions.com, and get the tickets.
Right.
Because it's sold directly there. I think it's going to be an inspirational night.
I mentioned the Oscars earlier. Have you submitted, and what's the process like if you have? I'm not sure how that works.
For the Oscars?
Yes.
Well, in order to qualify for an Oscar, you have to, in a short film, you have to win in one of, approved film festivals by the Oscars. And if you win, then you go into a pool of other films. So like Tribeca, I think, being one, and a few others, Palm Springs, So, you know, if you didn't get accepted into any of these festivals, then you don't get qualified as a short film. So that's the deal with the feature films. A different process where the film has to be in theaters for 2 weeks through a distributor and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then
So that leads me to my final question, and that is, obviously people can go to your website, ravisionproductions.com, to learn all kinds of stuff about the films that you're making. But where are these streamed if at any point in time people want to search for them on a streaming platform? Or is it simply you got to search them out by going directly to the source? How is that working?
Well, people will be able to enjoy Dream and Singing in the Dark and Beethoven's Letter on April 14th. And for a short time only, we are streaming all our films on our website. So they can see Santa Claus in Baghdad in full. They can see Fireflies in full. They can see Just Your Average Arab in full. And other projects as well, and inspiring documentaries. The reason because, you know, we're doing this for the next 2 months is, you know, because we want people to be inspired by our films without having to pay, and can enjoy them and discuss possible venues of screening in parts of the country if they're interested. And because we wanted to also bring awareness to our next project, which is a faith-based film about a group of Coptic Egyptian young men who were captured by ISIS in 2015 and were beheaded on a beach in Libya. And their 10th anniversary is coming up on next year. We filmed a half-hour version of this film in Los Angeles in December, and we're hoping to raise the funds for the remaining of the project and to complete it into a feature. And it's a powerful story, faith-based film, you know, that I think also will be inspirational to me as well.
Well, I congratulate you on doing something that's so creative and meaningful in terms of Dream and all the other films that have had quite an impact and will continue. And if I can express this hope and dream, no pun intended, Netflix, Hulu, any of the big ones out there, you're missing out on this gentleman and his work if you haven't picked him up yet and signed a big contract. So from my lips to God's ears, we say ravisionproductions.com is how you can find out more about Raouf Zaki. So nice to connect with you again, my friend, and I wish you the very best with all the forthcoming projects.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much,
Roger. Raouf Zaki, the film Dream, premieres April 14th at the Maynard Fine Arts Theater in Maynard, Massachusetts. Now, you have to get tickets in advance. Go to Raouf's website, ravisionproductions.com. That's ravisionproductions.com. And there you'll find a series of his independent films and some dynamite documentaries. ravisionproductions.com. That'll do it for me. JordanRich.com is the website. I want to say thank you for subscribing and downloading, rating and reviewing my podcast, heard all over the world these days, and I thank you for it. Till next time, this is JR saying, as always, be well so you can do good. Take care.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.